Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, don't fix Dice and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 550. NASDAQ Futures down 825. So we have the big employment report today. Last month was a clunker. It was like 12,000. And this month is expected to be like 214 or something. So if 214, the unemployment rate is supposed to go up, which is a little odd. But we will have that. Carl will be giving his best Carl in the second half hour. First hour, we have Kevin. Kevin, how are you?
Yeah, I am doing okay. How about you, Thomas?
All right. Did you go to the game last night? It was a good game.
I did go to the game, and yes, it was a good game.
What's the attendance getting up to? It looked like it was more people than I remember.
Well, the attendance was pretty good, but I'm sure very much suppressed by the weather because it was snowing the whole time, snowing all day, and then... and snowing throughout the game. I think I came out after the game and my car probably had an additional 2 inches piled on top of it. So, not the greatest night. So the place wasn't full. It's sold out next week for Connecticut. What we're talking about for the listeners is Notre Dame and Texas women's basketball played. So the Irish took a couple of losses last week, but they are still a top 10 team. And Texas, I think, came in rated number 3, and the Irish wound up winning 80-70 in overtime.
Oh, they look good. My girl's still playing. What's
crazy her name? Ending. Crazy ending because Olivia Miles scored the would-be winning basket with 2 seconds left, Texas didn't have any timeouts, so they had to just step out, step back, inbound the ball, and try and get a heave up. And the young lady who caught the ball kind of bumped into, just grazed a little bit, it wasn't much, but bumped into Liatu King from Notre Dame, and they called a foul. So Texas, with 1 second left, got to shoot free throws when they should have, when they were just trying to go, do the 94-foot heave to the basket.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
It was very weird, but and then of course when Texas came out and scored the first basket of overtime, you're sitting there going, my God, they're so deflated, that they're going to hope they don't fall apart. Well, they came back and scored 12-0 the rest of the way. So
those girls don't quit.
No, there's a couple of badasses there. The best play, and you can probably see it on highlights or find it on YouTube. The Notre Dame has a little point guard named Hannah Hidalgo, who's maybe 5'6" or 5'7", but she's really quick, and
she's like a ball of silly putty. She bounces on the ground, bounces right back up.
Yeah, and she's just a hellacious defender. As a freshman last year, led the country in steals, and so she went after a ball. It was one of those little scrum on the floor, but she grabbed it while sitting backwards, just heaved a perfect pass to lead Miles to a breakaway basket. And I thought, in fact, I just sent it out to our Notre Dame friends. It's a better long ball than Riley Leonard throws.
that is a
laying on her back.
Hey, we haven't done this in a while, and we've been talking about markets, and obviously, the markets are we're staying ahead of these numbers. It won't be too crazy, I don't think. Obviously, we've been sort of straight up, and it's really somewhat bizarre how the the people, everybody who's going to see Trump, I don't know what people think is going on down there, but it's almost like, are they getting absolution from antitrust for promising to salute the guy or something? I have no idea, but probably nothing untoward is happening. It doesn't happen all the time, and yet all of a sudden people are just convinced that what was ever on this guy's good side is just going to do spectacularly and everybody else isn't or something. I don't know. It's the weirdest damn thing.
That could be, Tom, but also... Do you not think that if you're sitting together and, you know, putting together policy teams and sort of figuring out what you're going to do, wouldn't you want to consult people who are, you know, influential in the field?
I absolutely think you should do that. I mean, Roosevelt did that. All kinds of people. There seems to be. Actually, I want to get to this baseball question. It's more interesting than this, but there seems to be some sort of a, and it started. I think it started when Bush was in office with Cheney, basically just telling people, I'm not separating myself from my business at all while I'm in here as a vice president. I'm still going to trade my stock. And I don't know if he was the first guy. There probably was some senator somewhere or representative that decided I'm not going to put my stuff in a blind trust. And there's probably somebody like that, maybe did that in the 50s. Who the hell knows, Kevin? But all of a sudden now it's becoming, can anybody even define the relationship between Tesla, which has gotten $9 billion by government largesse. They got nothing but government contracts. They're in up to their eyeballs, up the government's ass. And now this guy's going to have somewhat of a... And I'm not saying he's a bad guy or anything like that. I'm just saying it is amazingly untoward if you went back 20 years and looked at it and said, what the hell is going on? I mean, is there any chance... I'm not saying he's guilty of it. I can name 10 other people I think are way worse. I mean, is there any chance that, like, the Justice Department could ever bring a case against this guy for antitrust? I mean, it seems very untoward to me. I don't know how to define it, but it seems the crossover between one and the other. I mean, and Trump, to most people's, people around him, and who knows if they hated him or didn't hate him or whatever, if they're telling the truth, he seemed to do a hell of a lot of his own business in the Oval Office when he was in last time. And I don't think that ever happened before. Kevin, I mean, maybe it did. I just was naive. I'm not saying it's all that bad. I'm not saying that we're not going to. We could benefit from it. Who the hell knows? But it's just different, and it makes me very nervous.
Well, I get why that would make you nervous. But what business did Trump do of his own in the Oval Office? I'm kind of confused.
There was all kinds of people saying he was constantly going over what the Suns were doing with the buildings and all the other stuff. I mean, it's all anecdotal BS.
My next question was going to be who is all well, kinds of.
But I let's put it this way: in his personality.
Well, if you're going to throw that out there, I'd really like.
Well,
to
I mean, I've read it anecdotally in probably five different spots. They said he was doing his own business in the Oval Office, business of his company. Very aware of what the kids were doing. He never let it go. I'm not saying I blame him. I mean, Cheney didn't do it. Other people didn't do it. Way back in the day, people used to do it. Now, whether it makes a difference or not, I don't know. It's just different, and it makes me nervous. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'll have to go look for these reports and see what I think.
Well, the more interesting thing is now, with this being said, everybody in the world, damn near everybody who is a baseball fan, they will kiss the altar of this wins above replacement. Is any person you've ever known how to calculate the damn thing? Or you just they just take it. Well, I mean, I can check somebody's batting average.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is what I'm saying is we genuflect to the altar, but nobody knows where it is.
Season. You get out. You watch games with your calculator, and they put up the batting average on there, and what do you do? Sit there and say, oh no, I just calculated.
I'm just saying,
off 3 points. Why do I care what the calculation is if I understand what it means?
Well, I'm saying how. Unless I have some kind of an idea of what they're calculating and how they're factoring stuff, I'm taking it as bona facie evidence or whatever term is today for purposes of this conversation. I'm just saying, for all the people who swear by it, I've never known anybody who could define it, other than generally. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, everybody in the world knows what how an option's priced, except when I quiz them, they have no idea. That's all I'm saying, because I actually do know how an option's priced. You know, it's one thing I know that most people don't. If you ask them what the five variables are and what the definitions are and how they have no idea, and yet everybody's an expert, right? I'm just saying the same thing is about war. But the
real question about war is what is it good for?
Yeah, what is it good for? Yeah, good one on that. Good, ding, ding, ding. All right, so the question was, Who is baseball's best player since integration? Well, that's kind of a weird question, but the answer there is obviously very simple. And I'm sure you could lob that one out there.
The best player according to WAR?
Yeah. This is probably
Ted Williams.
Not even close.
All right.
Because
it's career WAR and his career was shortened. If you took average per season, I am willing to bet it would be Ted Williams. But keep going.
Willie Mays. No, integration was what, 48?
Yeah. But the reason I say that is, you know, Willie Mays, how many years did he play? Whereas what Ted Williams lose, like four?
Well, what?
So what happens is, Tom, anything that is a percentage type of calculation, you're going to find Ted Williams at or near the top. Anything that is a career calculation, you know, home runs, runs driven in, and that's how they calculate WAR, by the way, is just say what was he that season, stack it up against the next season, against the next, and accumulate them. So it is in part a longevity statistic too.
Well, when
you're evaluating career.
Well, this is rated on a number of seasons with a 9.5 or higher, which constitutes a top 100 season of all time. And then the decimal number, another number here, is the player's best year. All right. So if you go all-time, Major League Baseball ultra elites. Now, this is how many years they were in the top 100, which is not many people. They have more than one or two. Can you name them? Number one would be pretty obvious.
Well, Willie Mays.
No. Babe Ruth.
Now we're
this is all time. This is all time.
We're not post Jackie Robinson anymore. We're talking.
Yeah, down into the guy. So, by the way, since Jackie Robinson, it would be Willie Mays. But if you want to know who they are all time, then he runs a list here. I'm surprised. There's not very many people that are in the top 100 more than once or twice. Babe Ruth was 9 times in the top 100.
Yeah. And think of what the times were. Babe Ruth started hitting home runs in quantity back in the time when, you know, 10 or 12 could win you the league, the home run crown for the league. He sort of changed the way the game was played, the way hitting happened in baseball.
I wonder if they count his pitching years in here. I doubt it. The last year he pitched for Boston, he was hitting. He must have been at least pinch hitting. He must have at least hit enough where people knew how good he was. Let's put it that way.
They knew enough to tell him he needs to play every day.
Yeah, but there was no DH, obviously, so he'd hit on the days he pitched, and he must have just pinch hit other days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, second here would be Willie Mays, 7 in the top 100. And his best year ever was 11.2, which is number 17, by the way. The third, and here's the name that always comes up, and Rodgers Hornsby had 8 times. Then your guy Ted Williams, 5 times. Now, if he wasn't in the WAR,
twice, 2 WARs.
Well, I don't think you'd. By the time he went to Korea, I think he might have been a little older, but still.
Well, he was, but he still came back. And
yeah,
did really well. So, I consider him the best hitter that I of all time. But that's a personal.
Well, here's the guy's take on Ted Williams. I rank Teddy Ballgame this high because he probably would have had 10. Top 100 seasons, if not for the better part of 5 years he spent in the military, during World War II and the Korean War, serving his country as a top fighter pilot. The greatest pure hitter of all time, the splendid splinter, had the highest on-base percentage of all time, was the hardest hitter for pitchers to get out. There you go. There's the summary, just like you would say. So he thinks he might have been all 5 of those years, he might have been in the top 100s, which would have put him, you know, right there with Mays and Babe Ruth. I don't know if I'd give him all 5, but let's say if you gave him 4, it puts him as high as Babe Ruth, right?
Let's see what he did after he came back. Let's pull up. You go ahead and keep
talking. I got Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig with 5. People forget how good of a player Lou Gehrig was. I mean, talk about a two-way player. I mean, not two-way, but he was a great first baseman on top of everything else. He probably ranks, I'm going to say, other than Jim Brown, wouldn't you say he might have been the best two-sport athlete ever? He played football at Columbia. Mm-hmm. And he was a star, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, but you also
You have a bunch.
You get your Dave DeBuscher types. Who was a good player and then was an outstanding player in the NBA. Trying to think of
Bo Jackson, obviously.
Bo Jackson, clearly, especially a guy who come back after hip replacement surgery and still play a little bit.
Well, if you throw the ladies in there, you got to throw Babe Diedrichson. Was her last name Zaharias or something?
Yeah.
What was she? She was like five different sports or something.
Yeah, she was incredible. Hey, as we're looking at Williams, when after he returned from the first stint in the war, so he lost three seasons to World War II. First year back, 10.6, 9.5, 8.3, 9.0. So the years before were 10.4 and 10.5. So you could probably put him down for those 3 years for sure. And then the other years, when like the 1952, after he came back, because he only played six games in 52 and 37 in 53, came back in 54 and he was 7.5. Only played 98 games in 55, was a 6.9, so you know that could have been higher. But by 57, 9.7 WAR.
Yeah.
You certainly could bank the World War II years in his.
Well, the only thing with that, though,
wouldn't have been able to, and you probably can bank at least one more of the Korean War years.
Well, Willie Mays served time too. He was Korea as well? He missed a year or two. But I guess the problem I have with the World War II stuff, Kevin, is so many people were at war, the league was so watered down anyway. I mean, it's almost, you know, it's not like I'm not going to say you and I maybe could have played in those years, but it was everybody who was anybody was in the war, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it was almost like the COVID
else,
year.
They were serving in some kind of ceremonial type of role, or not necessarily in combat, but in a logistics role or something like that. Looking at Mays, yeah, he lost 53 to military service. That would have been his third year. So if you look at him, his WAR the first 2 years was 3.9, 1.3. Year off to military service, come back, 10.5, 9.2, 7.6, 8.3, 10.2. So his career really was ready to take off for him to turn into the Willie Mays that we all know about and some of us saw. Some of us are old enough to have seen him. So he might have had another one, might not have had another one. Hard to say at that point.
Well, I'll just go through the last ones pretty quick here because it kind of drops down. But these are all big names: Lou Gehrig 5, Ty Cobb 5, Mickey Mantle 4. If not for injuries and alcoholism, the Mick would rank even higher. But the guy played his whole career with a bum knee, and he never had any surgery; just was bum the whole way, right?
Well, because those were the days when there was no such thing as arthroscopic surgery where they could go in and fix things and clean them up and you could recover. Cutting open the knee would have been as traumatic as the injury, if not more so.
Mike Trout, this is the weirdest thing about this, I put for me I put Mike Trout in the same spot as Ichiro. I never got to see the guy playing out west. I mean, I guess I could have go watch him at Sox Park, but it was before the interleague play. But Mike Trout, every time the Angels come here, it seems like the guy's hurt. I don't think I've seen the guy play twice in his whole career.
He has had injury problems the last few years. He's an utterly incredible player, but he's also pretty nondescript. He hasn't really sought a lot of, outside of baseball publicity as well. So, he just manages to avoid the spotlight, and he's really one of the greatest players of his generation.
Well, Ichiro surely was too, right?
I mean, Ichiro, yeah. Now, he did have some spotlight to him, so.
And then you got Yaz with 3. 12.5 is the highest year. That's pretty darn high. It's higher than any of these other guys, pretty much. Matter of fact, his one year.
Peak Yaz was a pretty incredible player. It didn't it didn't let, he had a lot of, he played for a long time, but at his peak, he was way better than he was for most of his career. So, you know, if you were drawing that normal curve, that normal distribution, it would have a big spike up around the middle and then taper off on either side of the tail.
His year 1967, Yaz had an insane peak. The only player with higher season WAR than his 12.5 in 1967 was Babe Ruth, with the top three WAR seasons. I mean, for 3 years he was better than anybody.
Those 3 years would be out, you know, on that normal distribution, they'd be out on the tail somewhere.
Oh God, yeah,
as the outliers.
They got Stan Musial with two, Honus Wagner with two.
I was going to ask you if Musial was in there.
Well, two times in the top 100, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, a lot of baseball players. Cal Ripken, two. Joe Morgan, two. Aaron Judge already with two. Mookie Betts with two. Tris Speaker with two. Supposedly one of the greatest seven center fielders. He had eight seasons with 7.7 or higher. Eddie Collins. Here's the name that always comes up, Kevin. I don't know who this guy is. Lajoie. See his name all the time, and where did he play? I have no idea. I mean, I guess he was way before our time, but Ricky Henderson too, Hank Aaron zero, not 1 year in the top 100. His best WAR was 9.7. He said he was what make Hammer and Hank so special is that he was so very good for so very long. So however, WAR says he never quite reached the peak of Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle. Aaron had 10 seasons with MVP level WAR 7.9 or higher. Jackie Robinson one. Jackie could easily be in the top 20 if not for racism, delayed his major league debut, then made his life hell when he did. But despite the enormous obstacles he faced, Robinson had years as 9.7, 9.3, 8.4, and 7.4. That's pretty damn good. Barry Bonds, 2. Jimmy Fox, 1. Frank Robinson, 0, but he's up there. Joe DiMaggio net worth is 0. 9.3 with his missed a lot of Albert Pujols, 1. Lou Boudreau, 1. I would not have guessed that. Ernie Banks won, Ron Santo won. Vastly underrated Santo had seasons of 8.9, 8.9, and 7.7 WAR. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is pretty good. And you know, it's very good. So it's actually, looking at a pronunciation, it looks like it's Nap LaJoie.
Yeah.
Or LaJoie. And he was a late 1800s into early 1900s, played a whole lot of his career in Cleveland, but also played some in Philadelphia. I tell you, here's what's kind of cool about WAR, the statistic, because as you go over this list, it really stands out. It's really, really hard to compare baseball players from different eras because of the way the game was played, because of things like, you know, travel, comfort, night baseball, yes or no, and you know, their training, you know, the sophistication of training techniques. I mean, you can get all kinds of factors in there that make it really impossible to compare from one era to the next. And one of the nice things about WAR is it's a measure of how a player stacks up against the contemporaries of that time. So what you're saying is, you know, I can't necessarily compare Aaron Judge and Babe Ruth, but I can say how much better is Aaron Judge compared to the players of the, you know, 2020s? How much better is he, or how much better is Ruth compared to the players of his era? And that's, you know, that it's an interesting way to think about the players, because if you walk Babe Ruth into the game today, you might very well say, well, he wouldn't be nearly as successful, and that would be true. But on the other hand, if you walked him into his ability into today's, and he came up through the systems and he had all the training techniques and everything, then you might have him there. But that's all speculative. The one thing you can say is that there are many times when Babe Ruth is the best player of his era, just like there may be times when Mike Trout is the best player of his era.
Well, I would agree with that. I don't know what...
That's what I like about the statistics.
I do too, but I think that these people, there's a certain amount of... you know, high end of the gene pool that's there in every generation. I mean, right now there's an awful lot of better training and better, you know, whatever. Not as much drinking, not as much smoking. So guys are in better shape for longer, I think, and they get a lot more out of themselves. But even the guy's talking here about A-Rod. 1 year he's in the top 100. He says, what I've read, A-Rod may have used PEDs his entire major league career, putting him at the bottom of my ranking. How good was he really? Well, I mean, I played, well, a lot of softball. I played some baseball, not as much as I would have liked. But these guys, the one thing they all have here, and I don't care if they're Hulkman, I don't care if they're drunk, I don't care what it is, they have amazing eye-hand coordination. And their eyesight is way the top of the gene pool. I mean, and you can't take that away from them. Doesn't matter if they're fat, if they're whatever it is. I mean, Ernie Banks said he could pick up the spin on the pitcher's on the ball 5 feet out of the pitcher's hand. Who the hell can do that, Kevin? What normal person can do that?
Yeah, I had a hard enough time picking up the spin in slow pitch softball.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's these people are, you know, could Wilt play today? Would he be as dominant as people winging balls from the three-point line? Probably not, but look at the guy. I mean, who the hell looks like Wilt?
But on the other hand, maybe. You know, I mean, again, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, a guy that strong, that amazing, a physical, in physical ability, and as driven as he was. Because I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that we tend to discount when we look at guys with amazing ability is, do they still have to? It still takes a lot of drive to be that successful at that level, especially when you're looking at it, you know, the drive to be successful at that level over a lot of years. So I think we tend to overlook that, but I can't imagine that with the training techniques of today, with the, with a nutritionist and a personal trainer in his life and all this stuff going on, I can't imagine that Wilt Chamberlain wouldn't be just as good as it gets.
I mean, you do wonder. You know, it's odd, though, Kevin, is that these guys played a lot more games, and they didn't have private jets. I mean, Brickhouse used to talk all the time that they'd catch a, maybe once in a while they'd have a United charter, but a lot of times they flew commercial. I mean, the getting back and forth was much harder. The food wasn't as good, and yet these guys never took a day off. I mean, rarely did. And the pitchers pitched a hell of a lot more. Now, I don't know how much difference the mound made a difference. When, you know, we talk now about the relief pitchers changing the game, but the mound used to be higher too, right, which gave pitchers an advantage. So even if you didn't throw quite as hard, you were what? Was it 4 inches higher, 3 inches higher? Big difference?
It was substantial. You have to look up the stat on that too. But yeah, Bob Gibson and Don Drysdale made him lower the mound.
Yeah, those are two guys that absolutely changed the game of baseball. Right, Gibson probably more so, but still, I mean, it
didn't Drysdale have his consecutive innings record at that same season? That
right.
Gibson had like a 1.12 or 1.14 ERA.
Yeah, I saw a couple of those games. Him pitching against Fergie, unbelievable. Unbelievable. What were they? The games were what, an hour and 20 minutes?
Yeah.
you barely got your behind in the seat. You were out of there. It was, anyway, we got to go to break here, Kevin. We'll talk a little bit about this labor number today and see what you're seeing on your end. And I've been, we had a discussion last night about recessions a little bit. And I said, you know, we're never going to have another recession that anybody admits to. Because you can always pump enough money into the system to get your GDP up nominally, and then lie about the deflator. Like, can you imagine with his personality, or anybody's personality these days, with the way the press is all over you? Can you imagine Trump admitting to a recession? What do you mean? We've had how many people?
Greatest economy ever.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying we've had how many people in a row?
Seen this before.
Well, the COVID. What did they admit to? 2 quarters? For God's sake, it was like 4 or 5, wasn't it? And wasn't a couple of them really
a
depression?
Lot it needs to be. We need people to admit to on that, but it's not going to happen.
Oh, no kidding. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures up 4.
Preemptive. Go ahead.
Yeah,
we'll
be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Al. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 4. NASDAQ Futures up 2. My machine is slow. Not responding, it says, Ricky. How about doing traffic, weather, sports? Then I'll do this.
Absolutely. Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 here in beautiful and cold Chicago. 16 degrees right now with a high of 33. Brisk and chilly with intervals of clouds and sunshine. A warm-up is underway. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 29 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 51 degrees right now with a high of 80 degrees. Mostly sunny and very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 53 degrees over in Phoenix. Sounds nice, right? Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 19 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, 33 minutes. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 20 minutes. We're looking at 16 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 20 minutes. Let's go to sports. NFL Week 14 is underway right now. Lions beat the Packers yesterday 34-31. And this Sunday, December 8th, we got Seahawks at Cardinals, 3:05 p.m. And the Bears at 49ers, 3:25 p.m. NBA yesterday, the Bulls beat the Spurs. It's 129-124. And the Suns lose to the Pelicans, 124-126. Lastly, NHL this Saturday, December 7th, tomorrow, the Blackhawks face the Jets right here in the United Center, Chicago at 3 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Well, the Hawks have fixed everything. They fired the coach.
Yeah, so did the Bears, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what we do in Chicago.
Apparently, man. Is this normal?
Firing them is what we do. Is hiring bad coaches.
Hiring bad coaches.
Or hiring people in a bad situation. We'll talk for a second when I'm done with this, Kevin, about who the hell would want the Bears job. Dow down 26. It's a place where coaches and quarterbacks go to die. Bonds unchanged, 4.18. Again, we got the labor number coming out in a half hour. Bund is up 1 basis point, 2.12 over in Europe. Got the DAX up 38.1%, the FTSE down 10.1%. GAC around, however, up 100, 1.38. Not sure. The European shares edge higher amid French political uncertainty. Well, the stock market's up. They're not all that uncertain. We're in Asia, the Nikkei down 304, it's 0.8%. Hang Seng up 305, 1.5%. 19,865. I'm going to say they're going to make a run for 20,000 on Monday. Shanghai up 35, 1%. Asia Pacific stock, it's trade mixed. Amid global political crisis, Bitcoin crosses 1,000. Yesterday, Dow was down 248, S&P down 11, NASDAQ down 34. We actually had a down day coming down from record highs. I suspect unless we get a really bad number today, we'd probably be up today. Oil down 50 cents, 67.80, way below 70 now. Brent down 53 cents, 71.56. Natural gas down 6 cents, 301. RBOB down a penny, 192. Gold up 12.20, 26.60. Kind of a second weekly down for gold, but not very much, and it's come back the last few days. Silver up 14 cents, 31.68. Copper up 4 cents, 4.23. Foreign exchange, a euro 105.84. Pretty much unchanged here. British pound, 127. British pound has come back quite a bit. It never went down as much as the euro did, and the British pound versus the euro has been quite a big move, which is somewhat unusual. Crypto, Bitcoin's 98,126, even though we did cross one. As soon as we went over 100,000 to 103, came right back down 5,000, so it was a volatile day yesterday. I was going to say, give us traffic, weather, and sports, but we already did that. So, Kevin, are you in line for the Hawks job?
Oh, God, I haven't even put the skates on for a long time.
For those
who don't know, I did play hockey in high school, and I very much played hockey like a football player. I enjoyed crashing into people.
You played basketball the same way, as I recall.
Yes, I did. prefer to think of it as physicality.
Yes. I when people start talking about that stuff, I was listening to one. I won't say buffoon, but guy calling a football game, and he goes, he caught him with his athleticism and he tackled him with his physicality. And I'm going, what are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure he wrapped him up with his arms, but that's just me.
Anyway, What are you making on the labor report? Last month was such a clunker to the downside. We're looking for a bounce back. I just kind of wonder when the volatility. I mean, there's 21 days. I guess people are hiring or firing people, right? So it's always amazing to me how you can have an October number where you're hiring 10,000 people a day, and then all of a sudden you flip to the next month and you're hiring 200 people a day or something. I wonder if these guys have issues with their timing and whether there's 1 week they talk about or whatever, because I don't see how things could change all that fast. And of course they're always going back and messing with the last month really wasn't up 200,000.
That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. What's the adjustment? As low as last month's number was, are we going to adjust that down too, like we do every month?
I don't know how much lower can you lower it than 12. You're going negative.
Are we going to go negative?
I don't know. It's a plus. It's always really kind of weird when they don't match the household survey at all. You would think they'd somewhat match, at least in direction. So it should be an interesting number today. I'm sure Carl will have a lot to talk about. What are you sort of seeing on your end? Are people getting hired, fired, less hours, more hours, overtime?
No, it's about status quo. But status quo was, there's still some hiring because there's a lot of churn through the, through the average average person employment type of market. So there's still some hiring going on, but people are not getting the hours that they like. There's still a lot of people working a second job. So yeah, it's status quo, the same thing it's been all year. The big buzz around here is all data centers. Amazon is building a data center. We've been working with them very closely on building an employment pool. Microsoft is building a data center in Granger, which is a couple miles from me. And then there's another one in Bristol, which is the first town east of Elkhart, that it has an unnamed a client for a developer who has just gotten some property over there zoned for data centers. So, all of a sudden there's this tech boom. Well, there has actually been a tech boom in this area for a little while, but all of a sudden there's this huge infusion. And what's interesting about that locally is that they have to build out infrastructure for this. There's a lot of power that has to get pulled out, a lot of fiber that gets pulled out to these locations that were farmland before or were on the edge of a town before. And what that means is that a lot of other businesses will piggyback on that. So from an economic development standpoint, that's an interesting outlook for the area here. But from it's all down the road a little bit. I think Amazon expects to be up and running late next year. And this is an AWS data center. It's not a distribution center. It's a it's an Amazon Web Services.
Kevin, what happened? We were doing the show. I'm going to say 7, 8, 9 years ago, before COVID for sure. Wasn't it Microsoft was planning on building 5, 10, 12 of these massive centers around the country that took. I remember you and I were talking about it one day. One was going to go, was it Mount somewhere up near Mount Prospect or where you guys grew up? And it was going to take like 25% of the power from the whole area. They were big cloud computing centers, weren't they? And I think they only finished one of them and bagged the other 10. And I don't think they ever. I don't even know if they finished the one up northwest. If they did, it was might have been the only one. And now there was like a big pause for a while, and COVID came in, and now the stuff they're building now is that's sort of the same kind of stuff they were planning on building 10 years ago. Probably a little different, but isn't that the same sort of storing other people's stuff, massive data centers type of thing? That was all they were going to do. Everybody's backup, because all your regulatory people want you to do all this backup and stuff. Weren't they going to handle like everybody's backup for everything, even securities firms and everything? Is that sort of the same thing they're doing now?
Well, when they talk about cloud centers, they're talking about a lot of things. So some people will be buying processor power from them, buying basically cloud computing. Some of it's going to be storage. Of course, cloud implies all kinds of security, cybersecurity issues. So, that will be interesting to see how all that unfolds. And as I look at it, you know, as my conversations with them is in terms of jobs is they need data center support people, the kind of people who, you know, just are constantly running around fixing things. They need operations people who know a range from electricity to HVAC and all of that kind of stuff. They will need a certain number of cloud computing types of technicians who will work with clients on that kind of stuff. And they're going to need, you know, like up to 60, just for one data center, up to 60 supply chain / logistics people too. So it's, you know, it's kind of an interesting, what goes into it sort of tells you what they expect to do. When they first announced it, I figured it would pretty much be a lights out data center, but that's not what they're saying.
Well, whatever, the first stuff that never got built, what happened? People just had enough
computer. Don't have time, haven't studied it. Haven't studied what was supposed to go on in Mount Prospect.
Because I mean, they were the first or second of all kinds of them, and they were massive power things. They were massive, you know, buildings, and then all of a sudden we're going to finish one, and that's it. I mean, I think it was long enough before COVID for that wasn't an issue. But I mean, I guess the question I'm leading to, are these places obsolete before they're finished?
Well, define obsolete.
Well, I mean, all of a sudden somebody's on to the next thing.
The equipment can be. You know, Carl's talked about that with the AI stuff in NVIDIA, where, you know, people are making investments in stuff now and making commitments and buying stuff that by the time they really get to any real breakthroughs on it, are going to be obsolete equipment.
No, I guess where I'm going with this, so, when you were the...
So, yeah, there will be a fair amount of that, no doubt about it, but are they obsolete in terms of what they do? I think the appetite for processing power is pretty substantial and will stay that way. So, obsolete in terms of the need for capacity, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, if you were...
It's just how people are going to consume the capacity.
Well, in one of his previous lives, Kevin was the major domo, technic-wise, at Better World Books.
Yeah, ever, and several banks as well. So.
Well, so I'm saying you guys were one of the first... if you bought any books on Amazon way back in the day, you probably bought them from Kevin, Kevin's place. but you guys had massive needs in January and September because you did a lot of textbooks. And so you were one of the first people that knew about, you know, sourcing computer stuff off your property. And now I guess my point is to reach the stage where, you know, it's cheap enough for Better World Books to buy their own damn processor and not have to do it. I mean, say absolutely.
And actually, as much stuff as we did with, and we did some with cloud services, not a ton, but we did maintain our own web servers and such. You know, all of our outside facing stuff was proprietary. We were using the same technologies that they use for cloud, you know, and the same capacity increases and decreases, but we weren't necessarily consuming the service from an Amazon web. We were doing different stuff with AWS.
Because what I'm trying, you know, I'm always trying to come into things in a different direction than most, but we're having the news in Chicago. I also want to ask you about the guy in New York, the CEO. But with all that's happened in Chicago, we're moving people out of big homeless encampment in one of the parks, and you know, a lot of people don't want to go. That's their community. It's become their community. I've been there for so long. I don't know how many thousand people we're talking about citywide, Kevin, that are distraught. Either they're living someplace in a shelter, or they're living outside, or whatever. Is there any kind of talent there? I'm sure there's some. How do we get that, the people who are seemingly have piled out of society, how do we get them doing something where they feel better and everybody feels better about it? I mean, it seems like there's awful lot of stuff to be done in this city, even if it's cleaning up this or cleaning up that. I mean, people... You know, they want the moral hazard of,
of hiring people and going to clean up parks just to clean them up. Okay, well, obviously, you can leave them dirty for the winter, I suppose. But is there the money we should be spending on quite the fix? Is it almost costing us almost as much to not have the fix? You know, it's like we put people in jail. Well, they'll deserve it, I think. But without any education or anything in jail, we say we don't have enough money for it. If people come out and they got nothing else to do but go steal again. I mean, I'm wondering if is there a way we actually are we being foolish not to spend the money? I guess. I mean, can we figure out how many of these people are on drugs? How many people can be? They can't all be messed up forever. And how do we make a stab forward on this without just bitching about more money from this place and that place and somebody stealing the money and stuff? I mean, how do we make some progress here? I mean, I hope the new administration.
There are a lot of educational opportunities offered in the prison systems. So
I don't know about county.
I don't know about county either. But in the system there are a lot of people who come out and it depends, you know, from company to company. But there are plenty of companies who will hire convicted felons. They may not hire you if you were convicted of a violent crime. And that's, you know, that's a different challenge. But there are plenty who are willing to give a chance to someone who has served time and has acquired skills in the process and wants to come out. And so the question is, what are those skills? Do people learn some computer skills in there? Yeah, they do. Do people learn some, wiring skills, HVAC, you know, those kinds of things that are really important? Yeah. I think that's a big part of it, is that, you know, prison's not supposed to be a picnic, and I don't advocate for it being a picnic. But by the same token, it's exactly what you just said, is you definitely do want people to come out and not be thrown back out to return to, you know, whatever it was that got them there in the first place. So, yeah, it is about training, and, you know, and that is generally money well spent.
Does anybody know or care if you've got 3,000, 4,000 homeless people? Does anybody have an idea of where they all came from, what they used to do, what their skill set is, what their health is? Does everybody just BS about it and whine about not enough money, or whine about them being there? Does anybody have any idea what we're dealing with?
Yeah, for the most part, you're dealing with drug addiction.
Does that happen before or after?
That is the biggest factor in homelessness.
Does that happen before or after?
Oh, before. It's what gets people there.
Okay, thanks. All right. A couple of guys I used to talk to, I haven't seen in ages. I hope they're still alive. They just were guys that were, I don't know, what's the word for a little bit impaired, but certainly job capable, where, you know, all of a sudden there was a, you know, notice on the door, we're closed and everybody's out of here, and couldn't find something else. Imagine, you know, maybe they got into drugs, but how the hell do you have the money to buy drugs if you're homeless?
Oh, that's always where the first dollar goes when you're an addict, Tom.
Probably. I guess they deliver checks under the viaducts, don't they? You get mail?
I don't know.
I think they do.
What mailing address do you put on there?
I think it gets to them somehow. Anywho, your read on the labor numbers, they could be anywhere, basically.
Yeah, look, if you were to plot the labor numbers, over the last 2 years, you'll get a predictable pattern. And I don't think you'll see any substantial improvement over time at all.
How many people work a 40-hour week? Did any of these service industries do that?
I'd love to cut back to 40 hours.
I'm not so sure I would. I like trading. I like doing the show. So, but 40 hours would be cool. I'm not into. Well, I don't do the weekend stuff too much, but you do. If you're doing something, well. I guess where I'm sort of going with it, but I mean, we're Andrew, our guy on Wednesday, works for I don't know, what's the chicken joint, the new one that is just the chicken fingers. They don't do wings.
Canes. Yeah, we had a Canes open up here. I tried it once and thought, boy, I don't get these long lines.
Well, they got his spot. They're right by Wrigleyville, where all the bars are. So they're busy as hell after the bars close. It's great finger food, I guess. I don't think anybody in the place works 40 hours. Does that mean nobody has the insurance, or what does that all mean? Nobody gets a vacation? You know more about that than I do. I mean, what is it? If you work 32 hours, you're not full time at all, so you're not eligible for any sort of insurance. Do you get any kind of vacation? You get anything?
Depends on the company. Employing people in things like fast food and a lot of the low end jobs, you can get students often, but you might not. Actually getting people to come to work there, nobody wants to do it, and that's what they do. And yeah, there aren't a lot of benefits, but they do fight to get people. So, heck, I've seen a local McDonald's franchise owner offering tuition support for students just to get people to do it. So it sort of depends. But, when you look at the markets that, and the types of jobs that actually are available, they are fighting over, doing whatever it takes to get people in the door. There's a lot of open jobs. They're just not great open jobs.
What I haven't asked you this in a while. My nephew's firm is in the metal business, and they're always looking for people. Now, do you see we had Bill Moriarty on a couple of weeks ago talking about he loved being a civil engineer, building highways and things like that and bridges, and he says that's now not a there's openings there too, and yet it's not a very favored sort of thing in colleges. Are you guys seeing like a demand for people in some of these basic businesses that actually have come back or that are starting to be a little more concentrated here than overseas? Are you guys seeing a bulge in people wanting to be in those areas, learning how to be metal workers, knowing how to be civil engineers and things?
Well, I wouldn't see engineering students so much, of any kind. We do have an engineering program, but it's not highly populated. What am I seeing? It's kind of interesting. Yeah, I do. We do see in all kinds of fields. We see a lot of working adults who come back to school. A lot of it is because you get jobs that are hard. It's good work. It's honest work, and it pays pretty well. But a lot of people get to their late 30s and 40s say, is this what I really want to do the rest of my life? Do I really want to bust my ass physically as much, or do I want to start getting into other fields? Now, we also get a lot of young people who want to come in and they want to get into computing, but they all think they're going to be video game developers, and they're not. Because there's so many gamers in general that they love it. So they want to come into software development, and I don't consider software development a growth field, not like it once was for sure, and yet it's only by a handful of people our second largest program compared to cybersecurity, it's just kind of interesting where the demand is for the education versus what the demand is for employees, and they're not necessarily the same.
Really? Okay. So what? We got a few minutes. Fill us in on this football playoff here. We don't really seem to understand it.
What's pretty easy to understand.
Well, who plays who at home, and the part about the conferences getting the buys, even though they might not be the top, they still have people on TV talking about how. If you're the top four ranked, you're going to get the bye. That's not true, right?
That's not necessarily true. So here's how it works. It's 12 teams. It's structured like a 16-team tournament. So this is the easiest way to think about the seeding. So in a 16-team tournament, one plays 16, two plays 15, and so on. And then they get down to the... the next round is one plays the winner of 8 versus 9, 2 plays the winner of 7 versus 10, and so on. And so that's how a seeded tournament works. Now, in the case of the 12 teams, number 13, 14, 15, and 16 are nobody. So those are the first, and so the first four teams are playing nobody. In other words, they get the week off. So you know, there's your tournament layout. The first four spots are reserved for the four highest-rated conference champions.
How many conferences are there?
Oh my goodness, there's probably a dozen.
I mean, but there's only like six real ones.
Well, five actually.
Okay.
If you think about it, we're not counting the. Not even five. When we say real, what do we mean by real? I guess. First of all, you have your major conferences, your four major conferences. One of them is the Big Ten. One of them is the SEC. One of them is the Big 12, and one of them is Big 12. Oh, the ACC. Well, those are your four big ones. And generally, the champions of each of those conferences will be the top four rated conference champions. Now, if you're an independent like Notre Dame, you're not in a conference, you're not getting one of the top four spots. Period. End of statement. That's it. It's not available to you. So the highest Notre Dame could be seated is number five. And that would be true of any other team, which could be a conference runner-up, or could just as well be a
could be Army, could be
Army, it could be whomever. So we have that. All right, so we got that out of the way.
Well, where does that put Boise State?
Well, so this is where I'm going next. So you figure those four conferences are almost always going to get those first four spots. That's not necessarily true. Will the winner of the Big Ten get one of those spots? Yeah, it's Penn State against Oregon. Oregon doesn't have any losses. Penn State only has one. If Penn State beats Oregon and is 12-1, they'll get one of the top four spots as the Big Ten champion. Oregon will certainly get it because they're the number one team in the country, and if they defend that and win the game tomorrow, they will get one of them. The SEC champion probably will. It's Texas against Georgia. Georgia will probably be ranked in the top four if they win. Texas most certainly will. I think they're the number two team. Will the Big 12 champion get one? Both of their teams have two losses. I think it's Iowa State and who the hell am I missing here? Oh, Arizona State. Arizona State and Iowa State. The ACC is interesting because they have SMU. SMU has just one loss against Clemson, who already has three losses. So they finished 1-2 in the conference. If SMU wins, they will get one of the top four. But if Clemson wins, they won't be one of the highest-rated conference champions. They got three losses. Boise State will be one of the... assuming Boise State wins tomorrow... playing Nevada, Boise State will be one of the four highest-rated conference champions.
What conference is Boise State in? I read somewhere it was...
Oh, it's the WAC, I think.
No, first it was the Western Athletics.
Mountain West,
but then somebody else said it was a something five conference. What does that mean? It was, I don't know, whatever, that, maybe it was just a misprint.
No, they refer to... they refer to the next, sort of the next five conferences.
Okay.
Or in other words, they ain't the Sun Belt,
right.
That play at a substantially lower level. So yeah, when you look at the, I'm pulling up the conference standings right now. And you look at it. Let's find Boise. It's just
so the highest Notre Dame could be is five,
right. Boise State is in the Mountain West, and they're playing UNLV tomorrow.
Without their quarterback.
Well, apparently, yeah. Well, or he left him. I think UNLV has done just fine without him, though. So
yeah,
they're 10-2. So here's what happens next. Okay, so we've cleared up what the top four get. Then there are still eight teams. So 5 plays 12, 6 plays 11, and so on. 5, 6, 7, and 8 seeds get their first round game on campus. So as we, if we were to look at that based on the playoff rankings and now I'm pulling up rankings, college football playoff rankings right now, that would be, well, Notre Dame is fourth in their rankings, so they'd get pushed down to the fifth seed. But you're looking at Georgia, Ohio State, Tennessee, SMU potentially if they lost. You know, maybe even Indiana. I don't know.
Will the Irish get kicked down a spot if Penn State wins? Because it's Oregon would still be ranked ahead of the Irish. I would think.
Penn State is three right now. It's Oregon, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame. So
I think the Irish are going to get booted out of that spot by the loser of the Big Ten game.
They could, but it would be Penn State's second loss, so they could just as well hold it, and Penn State could get dropped to six, something like that. So we'll see. I mean, does it make a big difference? I don't think so.
No.
But it might.
Well, I think it'd be kind of fun playing Arizona State in the snow and two degrees in South Bend. Arizona State might not want to show up.
Well, my son sent me some kind of a predictor, you know, somebody's prediction for the seeds and then how they would advance. And it had Arizona State and Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl, which I'm gonna be in Arizona for that.
That'd be nice.
And we are going to the game, so that would be fun. But that, you know, that would be kind of a home game for Arizona State.
Well, they would have to be above 12, and they would have to win two games.
Just yep.
When all right, we gotta get to Carl, bud. We'll talk at you next week. Have a nice weekend. Well, I guess there's a lot of football to watch. No Irish to watch, but we'll watch this.
Well, there's a lot to watch, but I think it's stupid at this point. Just one more shot, and then I'll turn it over to Carl, and sorry for encroaching on the time. That it used to be that you couldn't even have a conference championship game unless you were split into divisions and the division champs played. That fell by the wayside several years ago, there's just one left, and I think that's the Sun Belt that does divisions. So all they do is they take their first place and second place team and make them play an extra game. To me, that seems like it has no football value whatsoever, especially in this expanded playoff era. People are jockeying for seeding, but that's about it. They could just as well stop the season after last week and say, you know, here you go. Your first place team gets the bye. Your second place, you could just go ahead and do that. All they're doing is risking injuries for people going into that playoff.
Well, you're assuming, first of all, I think you have to come to the conclusion, Mr. O'Neill, that there's no such thing as rules. There are now guidelines that can be bumped aside by the dollar sign anytime you want.
Oh, well, gee, yeah. Big shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Carl. I am equally shocked to learn that there's gambling going on.
Yeah, I'm stunned to tell you that when you have companies that have seen their stock price go up by a factor 20 since Obamacare was passed, and Barry told us that everybody would see lower health care costs, somebody gets mad enough to whack the head of the company.
Well, isn't it special that this guy... It appears we're talking about the CEO of UnitedHealthcare getting whacked, and that the dude has this all planned out, like he's evidently he doesn't look like he's a hired guy. Now he looks like he's some sort of a regular guy that has some skills. That he played this all planned out, and he let the young lady in the Starbucks talk him into taking his mask off because she was.
Chief, look. The reality is, if you make the decision to run the scoreboard, which is what he did. Okay, you're going to get caught. I mean, the odds in the modern era, especially against, now if it's some rando homeless person, maybe you won't. But, you know, but the reality is that if you do somebody of quote-unquote high value like this, you're going to get caught.
Well, 85% of the murders in Chicago don't even have a person of interest.
Well, yeah, I know. There's, you know, the clearance rate in Chicago, not so good, right? I don't know what New York's is. I haven't looked it up.
I think New York is, always has a pretty good police force, maybe because I just watch Blue Bloods once in a while. I don't know, but...
Well,
you guys, you guys have a good rest of the hour, and I'll be listening, but I got to go.
All right, take care, bud.
Bye. So, yeah, I mean, you know, so obviously this guy has made the decision that, you know, he's willing to pay the price for his offense.
Yeah, he looked like he covered himself pretty good.
Well, you do the best you can.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I mean, you know, I don't think anybody does something like that and tries to get caught. But, you know, but clearly, I mean, you have to expect that that's what's going to happen. So,
I've never, it always... I don't know. It sort of troubles me. First of all, I don't like it when anybody gets shot, Carl, and I really don't like it when a policeman gets shot. But it's almost embarrassing. How can I say this without being an ass? It's almost embarrassing the amount of resources they can bring to bear if they want to.
Right.
And I know you don't have, if you have 50 murders on a weekend, or not 50, if you have 10. You probably don't have the resources to go after those guys like you would be this guy's person or somebody who killed somebody, you know, law enforcement or whatever, which, by the way, should never happen, but it does.
But it does, right.
But somewhere, if it was me, I would say, okay, I know we don't have the capability of doing all 10, but let's pick two and pretend they were the president that got shot. You know, let's not just let all 10, never get to them and go back to your desk. You know, let's pick one or two. Same thing with robberies. Let's take one out of 10. Let's actually go and see if the fingerprints are there of somebody we recognize, some other stuff. Let's actually do the job one out of 10. Maybe people get the idea that you can't always get away with it or something.
We've talked about this in the realm of general criminality.
Yeah.
Okay, many times, right? Which is that the issue with deterrence is that it's the odds of getting caught times the cost of getting caught, right? And then you take that and you compare that against the, I didn't get caught, right?
other than you and I, Carl, and maybe a couple other people on the show, who even has a clue? I mentioned in one of the classes I took at University of Chicago was about crime and punishment. Now, this particular thing, you know, who the hell knows? This may not be rational. I mean, you know, crimes of violence probably are not rational, but 95% of the in this class, they assume 95% of people who are criminals are essentially rational to some extent. Property crimes, where if you have a 10% chance of getting caught, and the cost of getting caught is twice what you're stealing,
right?
You go, girl, right? Right? I mean, you see that in corporate stuff all the time. You know, some banks and corporations do crap. They make, you know, $1 billion, and if they get caught, which is 1 out of 100, the fine's $20 million or some stuff, and you think, boy, we just spanked them. No, you didn't.
This is the thing that I always point out with this, which is that the primary issue that I have with the way that we do this sort of thing when it comes to corporate acts. And you know, that's where I focus most of my attention, although, you know, certainly it's, you know, all of it is important, right, to somebody who is on the wrong side of it. You look at for example, the situation that we have with healthcare in the United States right now. You have a situation that you could take cost and drop it by 80% right now. All right. However, if you did that by taking all the scams and the fraud and the racketeering out, okay, the price fixing and everything else, the cost outside the United States, where, you know, currently, I mean, all you got to do is look at how much per capita gets spent in the United States versus in, say, Germany, all right? It's 3 times as much in the U.S. Well, if that's the case, then how come we can't have a 60% reduction in our costs today? Well, we can.
I'm going to say that probably the overall health care in Germany is probably better than here.
Well, it is if you look at objective measurements of actual outcome.
Well, you look at people that the incredible amount of people in our country that are really outside the system and wouldn't even think of going to the doctor is enormous.
Well, sure, but here's the thing. All right, at the same time, every single act that in some way empowers somebody to screw you for money is left alone. All right, and nowhere was this more on display than during COVID.
Oh yeah,
when you had hospitals that were paid for procedures that we knew were worthless. We knew scientifically they were worthless. We knew that ventilators were worthless in March of 2020. We knew it because they tried to use them in Wuhan and everybody died. Essentially, everyone died.
Well, let's
that. Let's, so here's the thing. But Chief, the federal government paid hospitals a bonus if they used one on you.
I know. Plus But
what they didn't pay a bonus for is you getting up out of the hospital bed and walking out of the hospital.
No.
All right? Now, you can say, well, but, you know, these were extraordinary circumstances with care and whatever. Okay, listen, I'm all good with that, where, you know, these guys are all screaming that they're going to lose their shirts because, you know, nobody has coverage for this or that or whatever. I get all that, all right? I get it. However, you put the lie to the idea that this had anything to do with human beings and anything to do with human life, and anyone cares about human life on either side of the aisle, left or right, as soon as you do not pay for success.
Carol, we've known, I want to shift this a little bit to today's subject because I think it's important, and it follows right along with what you're saying, but it's clear to everybody you've got the inmates running the asylum when it comes to this.
No, really?
Yeah, I mean, But what you do about it? My question is: I listened to Reshwani. Is that how you pronounce his name? The guy who was with Musk.
Reshwani, yeah, Vivek, yeah.
But he very very literate, by the way. The guy is literate. He's very bright. I mean, very literate thing. And we touched on this. I don't think you were on, but I know you probably listened when Katie was on. We'll get her back because she's back from school. We're talking about how the overhead gets assigned when people give money, and we kind of went through this yesterday, so keep the short version. If you give money to, let's say, sickle cell or something, some disease, now that's kind of a cost center, and maybe that person, I just picked a disease off the top of my head, maybe the person who's doing the research has enough chops to also get some money from government, and so that goes into that pot as well. And maybe somebody else gives a general donation to the school. We don't know where that goes. But there's all kinds of money flying around with all kinds of different pots. And Katie was pretty good at talking about that. And she said that the hospital puts an overhead on top of that.
Right, puts a markup on it, basically.
So, but now I had no idea, and Katie didn't know the number, but maybe she did. I just didn't ask the question. This guy comes out and he says, you know, the overhead they put on, it's like 70%.
Yeah.
And he goes, nobody would give money. I mean, I'm listening to this guy, and I'm sitting there going, I thought he was pretty bright in the debates, too. But, I mean, he goes, nobody would give money to a charity that ate up 70% of the dough and overhead.
Oh, but people do. Chief.
Nobody does.
No, you're wrong about that. How many people give money to the Red Cross?
Well, when I say
well,
nobody.
Wait a minute. Well, no, I'm serious about this. How many people... And by the way, we actually had state government officials here in Tennessee who really pissed me off. I went off on these guys that were, don't load up your truck full of water and food and take it over to the churches that are distributing it to people that got screwed after Helene, right? Don't do that. Give the money to the Red Cross. Okay, so a couple of decades ago, I looked into this, and that was the second time around because I had them and United Way both try to get me to allow them to run fundraising drives in my company when I ran my company. This was all the way back in the 1990s in Chicago. I looked into the efficiency of where that funding went. And if you attempted to, say, for example, there's an earthquake and you want to help the people that got hurt by the earthquake. So you give the Red Cross money for their earthquake recovery fund, which is how they marketed it. Okay. Something like 5% of it actually ended up going to the people that got hit by the earthquake. The rest went to whatever the hell else Red Cross wanted to use.
Well, it's like sending your money to the general fund at Notre Dame.
Well, exactly. You may as well just say, well, I kind of like what these guys sort of do, well, so I'm going to give them some
cash.
Well,
I somewhat misspoke when I'm saying most of the people, one of the guys, he's been on the show a couple times, Jimmy Lawler. He's our mortgage expert.
Yeah.
And Jimmy says that his family, his grandfather, I don't know the whole story, but his grandfather had a bunch of dough, and they got a family foundation. And once a year, they give out, you know, $1,000 here, $2,000. You know, if you have a foundation, I guess you have to give out a certain amount. I don't know much about foundation law, but
you can't retain it.
But those guys, I mean, they get together, the people on the board, and he's one of them. And they actually gave $1,000 to Fisher House because they really like Diane, you know, Diane Kelly's story and the veterans and so forth. And right. I think those guys are like 90% go straight through.
Oh, well, that's, you know, look, I mean, if you actually wanted to help people in North Carolina and East Tennessee that got hit by the hurricane, Samaritan's Purse has a near 100% pass.
Yeah, well, I mean, the lady
So, I mean, there are entities that actually do what they say they're going to do. Not all of them are snakes.
Well, one of the ladies who was on the show died in the car crash earlier in this year, my good friend Robin. She was on the board of Chicago Food Depository, and she was going to, this is years ago, she goes, I'm going to donate my time, but I'm only going to donate my time to some place where the money goes through to people. And she must have researched 40 of them and finally sent her resume to the Food Depository, and they were happy to have her because they passed through like 95% or some number.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, there are places that do good work, okay? I'm not disparaging every...
I think the Salvation Army is pretty good, better than Red Cross. Catholic Charities, I think, is real good.
No, Catholic Charities is awful.
Really? I thought that in the Chicago area, they're considered one of the better ones.
Well, then somebody is funning you because back when I used to live there, I looked at, you know, doing some volunteering with their food bank stuff, okay, because, you know, they run food banks, okay, to, you know, to help out people that are, you know, that they don't have any food, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you know. All right, so... after doing some distribution for them a few times, you know, volunteering to show up in stuff bags, basically, I thought, you know, let's just, I know what these guys have. All right, I'm going to go up to Sam's and I'm going to blow $1,000 and stick it in the back of the truck and bring it down here. They wouldn't take it. They told me, don't do it. We won't take it.
Well, so out of the big ones, I know, I think I've heard this Wounded Warrior's not so hot.
Yeah, well, the problem. All right, so here's what ends.
I don't
want to
say. I mean, I don't know the stats in front of me, so I'm just.
Well, this is what ends up happening with all these organizations. It's the same thing that happened with FEMA. It's the reason that FEMA is essentially as useful as tits on a bull, and it's that once you start getting into the industrial scale charity stuff, okay, you're not a little guy. You know, you're not like Samaritan's Purse, where you show up and actually start handing out food to people. You've got, you know, national organizations that are doing this kind of thing. All of them have preferred vendors. All of them are essentially grift and kickback machines that are built in such a way that, for example, Campbell's Soup donates 500 cases of soup to the, you know, to the food relief organization. Campbell's Soup writes off the cost of the soup. And that's why the organization doesn't want you going up to Sam's Club and buying it. Because if you do that, Campbell's doesn't get the write-off.
Right. Seems to me that we just get more soup, but that...
No, every single one of these entities, once they get to a certain size, they start doing this. They all do it. And FEMA's the same way. FEMA says, well, you know, you got this road or this bridge that has to be rebuilt or whatever. Okay, fine. Except there's these five contractors over here who have to get the work.
Oh, yeah. Therefore, well, that's very Chicago-ish.
Therefore, that these guys show up with a bunch of bulldozers that are going to fix it. What we're going to do is we're going to come in there and we're going to actually put a gate up there. We're going to barricade what these guys did, put cameras up, and threaten to arrest them and fine them if they break the barricade.
All right, before these numbers come out, we're going to break early here, but we're not there yet. What you've been talking about, you know, for months and years, Carl, that a lot of the new hire is in the medical industry, and, like, what do they do all day? I mean... We'll
steal money.
Well, okay. I'm not...
90% of them steal money. All right, 10% of them are doctors.
All right, what if... The you know, the research stuff that Katie and people were doing, all these other people, is what if this guy is successful at yanking this overhead rate from 70 to 40, where you and I might think it way more fair there. What does that do to these colossal places like Northwestern and places like that? How many people get canned? Do we ever get the CEO to get his cut in pay? I mean, what actually happens? Is it just going to
two thirds of the people that work in those places get fired?
But they're the people that are probably going to are doing the work, and the other people.
Well, they're doing the work and making sure the money comes in. The reality of the situation that we have today is that most of what we have going on, not everything, obviously, right? I mean, you know, people have terrible things happen to them that, you know, is not caused by this kind of thing. But the majority of the bad things that we have happening within people today are either a result of what the doctor gave you, or they're a result of the industrial processing that we look at from a standpoint of how we handle food distribution and things like this. And so, I mean, I've been yelling about seed oils for a long time. I now have enough data in the form of my own personal, I mean, it's an anecdote because it's one person, okay? But I can tell you absolute certainty, every single time I consume any of those, it hits my overnight HRV and my overnight stress levels. That is objectively bad by any medical standard you care to use. And it is that one thing alone that causes it. If we got those out of the food supply, all of them out of the food supply, I'm willing
you're
to...
Talking, you're not talking olive oil or something.
I'm talking about, in many cases I am, because olive oil is actually the most adulterated alleged food on the planet. And it is frequently full of canola, rapeseed, and things other than olive oil. Okay? I'm talking about all vegetable seed-based oils. We should not be consuming them, period. End of conversation.
All right, name the ones. Oh, is corn oil vegetable seed?
Yes.
Okay.
Corn, peanut, rapeseed, canola, soy.
Rapeseed's the same as canola, right?
Yeah, but they're called by different names,
right?
Okay, in some cases.
So is there any good one?
No, there aren't any good ones. That's the problem.
So pure olive oil is not good.
Pure olive oil is okay if you can actually get pure olive oil. Good luck. Avocado.
I always get it.
Avocado. Well, you think it is. Have it chemically tested. Oh, actually, you don't even need to do that. All you need to do is make a stir fry with it, serve it to me, and the next morning I'll tell you if it's adulterated.
Really?
And 100% of the time I'll be right. And this is so
so you get
beautiful
pure first pressed organic olive oil. You're telling me it's not olive oil?
A lot of the time it is not. It has some olive oil in it.
Well, one would hope.
Well, I'm just saying. But no, this is actually one of the most. It is.
There's all kinds of mixtures of it. Yeah, I mean.
No. I'm talking about stuff that's actually labeled as 100%. Yeah.
So you go to the contents thing and it says 100% olive oil. You're telling me it's not. I guess I'm a disbeliever of a lot of things. At least I believed in that. Now you're telling me I can't believe in that.
No, you can't. You can't believe labels anymore. And the thing is that where you really run into problems with this is if you eat out, it is almost impossible to avoid being poisoned like this because it's not disclosed, and all of the restaurants use this stuff even when they claim they aren't. So, just recently, I go into this place that I know quite well, And I get a cheese dip with buttered crackers. Well, butter is not a problem. Whatever they put on those crackers wasn't butter. I got hammered that night, and it was not butter. And that's the only thing I ate that I know possibly had that problem.
Let's
finish
off at a quick break here. You know, we'll come back for these numbers, because it's 7:29.
Yep.
Ricky, we'll go to a real quick break and come right back.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures are all over the place. They're just down 10, now they're up 2. So numbers just came out. I've got the, they're slow on CNBC. How much?
227.
227. So we went 2-something, 12, 227. Well, you're going to be having to explain. I've got the I got the household number down. I'll just give what's going on here because we're Europe and those guys are not catching up. So I got us up actually down 300,000 in the household survey. So why don't we just go right to Carl here, Ricky? We'll worry about the Blackhawk coach getting fired on Monday.
Well, let's see. I got 161,456 on the employed number, which is a gross decrease of close to 500,000. Not in labor force is 101,299, which is. That's up about 500. Ooh, boy, that's bad. That's up about 500. And then I got 469,453. Helps if I can type straight. All right, so we got the, this is about how I thought everything would kind of net. We have the employment participation ratio, which, of course, is the one that I yell about all the time. That's down 2 ticks. It's under 60%. It's at 59.9 now.
I got 59.8 in the adjusted.
Yeah.
That's as low as it's been in, God, let me look.
22. It went over 2203 is when.
Yeah, 2021. During COVID.
During the middle of COVID, it was, way down, below that, right? Because all those people.
I got 2016 was the last, non-COVID month we were under 60.
It's, I have a 59.7 in January of this year and a 59.9 in February, again, on unadjusted. However, those are firing months normally, all right? That January month is, is when all the temporary help gets let go. So we got this in November is not an off-cycle number. That's normally a high point because you're hiring going into the, into the holiday season. So that is a bad number. The unadjusted employment numbers, -482, which is about what I expected. Here's the worst news, and this is really bad. The year over year, and again, this is what happens when you have an off-cycle deviation like this. The year over year is -693 unemployed. All right, now that's horrible. Not in labor force is up 579. Annualized basis is plus 1.45 million. So that's, that's a very bad number. And then the granddaddy number of all of them, which is the one that used to be the only one I really ever cared about other than the employment population ratio, is the 12-month change in employment less the change in population. All right, of course, the working age population. If you gain 500,000 jobs, but you put 500,000 more working age people into the system, you don't gain anything. All right.
Well, at least those people are all working. If it's exactly
They're working, but from a percentage point of view, you haven't gained anything. Okay. From a fiscal stability point of view, who's paying taxes, who's not? You've gained nothing. You've got nothing. However, this is a really bad number. This is negative 2.334.
So where did they get the positive 227 out of?
Well, I don't know, but this is a cycle. By the way, that that neg 2334 is a cycle low because it's all the way back to, I mean, obviously the COVID dislocation, you know, was enormous, much bigger than that. But I'm scrolling back here as we're talking, and the last time I saw a negative 2 million was in 2013 on a 12-month adjusted basis.
Well, the
this is 10 years, and by the way, that was a one-off. And then again, we didn't see that those kinds of numbers again until the Great Recession, you know, 2008 to 2010 period.
Roll with me for a second here, because I'm looking. I'm not the only schmuck in the world that looks at the simplest page here.
Of course,
there's a million schmucks that do this. Maybe more than there's got to be way more than a million schmucks out
there.
A
lot of schmucks.
Yeah, it's a lot.
There's a lot of schmucks in the world, right?
I'm looking at the A1, the adjusted stuff, but. Yeah. As my friend Carl reminds me every week, over a yearly period, there shouldn't be an adjustment.
Right, because well, Christmas
okay,
comes
so
at the same time.
Roll with me for a second. Now, this is the household survey. Now, the difference between the two is if I'm delivering pizzas and on Tuesday and Wednesday, and I'm delivering Chinese food on Monday and Thursday, if both establishments are going to call me, say I'm hired.
Right.
Household survey is going to say I've got one job. Because I'm one person that's working.
Because you're one guy.
From last November to this November, Carl, these numbers are friggin' horrible. I've got us down 750,000 people employed.
Right.
I've got the employment ratio going from 60.4 to 59.8, which is horrible.
Right.
I've got 900,000 people more unemployed from 6.2 million. 7.1. That's pretty horrible. And the people who don't know what they're doing, they're out of the labor force, went from 99,695 to 1,177,000. So that's
a million and a half.
It's almost. A million and a half. So
right.
these over from last November to this November, now I don't know how the adjustments could play in there over a year. I don't think I've ever seen a worse year.
This is a bad number in the internals. And by the way, the other thing that's really a problem here is these are high income people that are getting fired. I'm looking at the educational attainment tables, and the mopes with no with no high school diploma are getting laid off. Okay, I mean that's not a huge surprise, right, when you start to see things get soft. But their unemployment rate has gone down. And the reason is that they, you know, every year people bump from, okay, you didn't have a diploma, now you got one, right? So that has happened. But you can never lose a degree once you get one. And the participation rate for bachelor's degrees and higher was down 3 ticks last month from 72.8 to 72.5. The gross number of employed people was down. The employment population ratio is down 2 ticks. And yet the unemployment rate went down on that list. Now this is, I don't like these numbers. There's a problem in here because how do you get that happening with the unemployment rate going down unless these people either left the workforce, in which case they don't count as being unemployed anymore.
Well, but they're saying a million, some five did that over the year.
Well, so, I mean, that's yeah. That's plausible, right? The only other way it happens is you die. So, you could leave the workforce. You know, you're in a nursing home. You gave up. You're not a workforce. So, you're couch surfing or whatever. But if you're couch surfing and you have a bachelor's degree, and it's because you can't find something productive to do, that's probably not a very good economic indicator.
No, the other thing I wanted to quiz you on, ask you about, is how do we go from, and I mentioned it with Kevin a little earlier, how do you go from 2 months ago, we picked up 200 and some thousand, so... Well, let's say it's 10,000 a day, or getting hired. I mean, it's 20-some days, right, that you're doing stuff, not
right.
Weekends. Next month, you drop down to 50 people a day. Now we're back up to 20,000 or 10,000 a day. All right, that's not happening. I mean, what is happening? I mean, how are these numbers? How can there be that much timing difference between on this day we hired 100 people? Tomorrow we're hiring 10,000. I mean, obviously that's not happening. Why caused these numbers to be this skewed?
Well, some of it's sample error, but some of it's also knob twisting, and you got to wonder if maybe the knob twisting stopped when Biden's chosen replacement lost.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time.
I'm just saying that this is why I use unadjusted numbers, okay, because at least that way I'm getting the survey as it is and not what some MOOC in the BLS wants to, you know, dial up for whatever purpose. And you'd love to believe that there isn't a political aspect to that, but I've good luck with that. There's a political aspect to everything. So why would I not believe that it would happen here? The other thing that's interesting is that over the last year, we've also seen a fairly significant increase, around 250,000, and two ticks on the percent of total employed, multiple job holders. So, and that to me is interesting because at the same time you have a huge move upward, 1.5 million of not in labor force, and
that's a big number.
That's a very large number. So on the one hand, we have people that are taking multiple jobs in order to stay ahead, and then there, on the other hand, they're saying, well, even with multiple jobs, I can't make it work. The numbers don't make sense. Screw you, I'm leaving. And oh, by the way, if you want to know where some of the budget deficit problems are coming from, well, that would have something to do with it. The other thing that's interesting is, and this is a contrary indicator, is that average weekly hours were up a tick, which now that's on a gross basis, and they were up a tick in manufacturing, but not in private service providing, which is to me is kind of an interesting thing, because on the service side is where you'd think, but trade, transportation, utilities, you're seeing the expected wholesale trade number. The hours worked up a little bit because, of course, we're coming into the holidays, right? So, I mean, you'd expect to see that, you know, more trucks. Transportation and warehousing is down three ticks. That is a very bad number. And utilities cratered, down nine ticks. Now, that is a large decrease. And by the way, in information services and also down substantially. So there's some rumblings in this data that are pretty bad. Although, you know, again, weekly paycheck, up a little bit. And so, you know, I mean, huge percent, no, but, you know, but up a little bit. And that's fairly consistent. I don't see what usually goes first there is in leisure and hospitality and other services, and those again positive, you know, by a couple bucks, but you know it's not a negative number. Transportation and warehousing, on the other hand, weekly checks are down.
We're degrading from below.
This is failing from the bottom up.
Yes.
And there's trouble here afoot because when it starts to show up, in the durable goods number, one of the things that I used to always watch very carefully, and I've been paying a lot of attention to it the last few years, but the leading indicator that was always 2-3 months ahead of everything else was telephony products and computer products. And the reason for that's really simple. If you hire somebody, you need to put a phone on their desk and a computer on their desk. Okay, so if those numbers were going to hell, then that was telling you something about employment that was going to show up in the numbers a couple of months later, and that I'm seeing negative deviations here in hours worked and weekly payrolls and information in IT is and also in utilities is a. That's a fairly significant leading indicator as well. I'd say that's a big deal.
When you look at the market here, the S&Ps are up, Nasdaq's up. We've got Tesla, every day the guy stays down in Mar-a-Lago, the stock goes up 3%.
Yeah, you notice that.
Yeah, it's a... Normally, if you know, if you were studying economics a few years ago, you'd look at this and you'd say, this is something we need to be concerned about up and down the line. But now, I mean, boy, I don't give investment advice, but today's world is, oh, good, they're going to put more money in the system. You got to own every stock there is, because we're going to run this up. I guess a stupid question, was there ever a recession in the Weimar Republic? I'm thinking no.
You know, the problem with the Weimar Republic is half the people starved.
Yeah, but it's okay.
And then this, well, until this Austrian painter shows up and says, I can fix all these problems. And then very bad things happen. And
well,
so
what I'm saying is the people, everybody thinks that this is bad for some people. I was reading something a few months ago as I was digging more into it because I'm fascinated with that whole era and what those people did and why they did it. And it was all part of the Versailles and all, I mean, all crazy stuff. How the farmers absolutely loved it. Because they paid off all their mortgages in like 6 months.
Yeah, well, you know, there's all sorts of things that, you know, the thing about dislocations like that is that there's always somebody who manages to pick up the nickels in front of the steamroller and make a lot of money, right?
Well, but I mean, if the dollar, the biggest benefactor, and this is, you know, boy, they never want me on national TV saying this, single biggest benefactor of inflation is the federal government.
Well, yeah, but the thing is here's the problem. You'd think that would be true, right? Because that helps pay the debt off, right? You devalue the money, and yeah, you'd think that's true. But they never actually pay the debt off to it. They always double.
Well, but they don't pay it off. But if you bought a 10-year bond in you know 8 years ago, you're going to get that money back, and it's going to be worth half of
money,
what they gave it to you.
Yeah, it's inflated money, yeah. Well,
but also, no, how many people, I mean, you talked about the paycheck going up. We were a time, we had a million tax brackets. We got used to people's taxes in those days. Imagine me doing people's taxes. Well, that was before, I was not one of these guys. There was a guy that, I don't know if he's still alive, He was a CPA, and he would do the taxes. I don't know if you ever know the building was 1E Scott. Well, 1E Scott had studios and one bedrooms. It was packed with ladies, just packed, because everybody two blocks away was the Ambassador East. This is before there was a blue line to the airport. So if you left home and were living on your own as a stewardess, back when they were called stewardesses, you had to live within like two blocks of where the bus was. Because the bus would go from Ambassador East, and you could buy like a monthly ticket on this bus, and it was, you know, safe thing to do. It left every hour. Well, he would do the form EZ, because these girls didn't want, even if they had we're talking, they had the easy form, but then there was another one that actually was form EZ, where all you put, they'd hand him the W-2, they had no deductions, no anything. Hand him a W-2, he'd take the deduction. He must have had... The guy kind of looked like Woody Allen. He wasn't exactly Robert Redford. He was just hoping. he charged, you know, $15. He'd take it to his place because he didn't want to see them do it, or maybe charge $50. He didn't want to see them. It took him literally like maybe a minute and a half to do the thing. But it really was to meet the girls, not to make any dough. Anyway, talking about going off topic. But anyway, I did taxes, not for that reason. And there was all these different brackets. Well, now the key bracket is between 40,000 and 50, right?
Right.
If you're below 50, you pay 12%, and if you're above 50, you pay 22, right? Or is it 20?
Right. That's there's a racket right there, right?
So if the inflation gets to the part where it finally trickles down to your salary, and if you're union or whatever, and you get this, you know, 15% raise or 20% raise, and you're making 40 grand, now all of a sudden, or you're making, you know, 45, and all of a sudden you're making 55, all of a sudden you're not keeping all that money.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know,
that's what, you know, it's so bizarre. I mean, and people have back and forth, and when I criticize the incoming and former president on some stuff, it's not like I'm not criticizing other people. When the tax thing where if you have too many different knockoffs, you got to go with this alternative tax. The alternative tax.
Oh, the AMT. Yeah.
Yeah. When I think, Carl, from my memory, and I could be wrong, but when that tax was passed, I think it affected less than 100 people.
Yeah, it was basically an attempt to stop people from being able to you know, more or less screw their way out of paying any taxes legally.
Yeah. I mean, there were less than 100 people. I mean, they were the Rockefellers. Those are the guys that were given, you know, the foundation money and doing all that kind of stuff. It was a limit on that. Well, when Trump put through this over 10,000 in property taxes, you can't deduct any more than that. This was only 6-7 years ago, and it probably didn't affect, you know, the big thing. It affected the rich people in Connecticut that didn't vote for him. That was the story. How many people does that affect now? All kinds of people. There's huge swaths of people in Cook County that are paying over 10 grand in taxes. Was it intended for all those people?
Well, yeah. I mean, there was there were a number of years where I had to calculate it, and I think I had one or two where I actually had to pay it.
You're talking about the alternative minimum tax.
The AMT. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everybody. I got my tax return done, and it wasn't like, you know, we're not talking zillions of dollars, and they went through the calculation. I didn't have to go in there, but pretty much everybody goes through the calculation for everybody.
There have been a number of years that I've had to go through the schedule.
Yeah.
But I think there's been actually like 2 years where I actually had to pay it. That's the way the calculation came out. So, you know, it is what it is.
But this $10,000 property tax, if you went back and listened to Trump and these guys' speeches, and I'm not saying the Democrats don't do the same thing, they do. Go back and listen to their speeches, we're only affecting rich people that essentially didn't vote for me. Well, duh. 6 years later, you're probably affecting, you know, some significant percentage of the population.
Well, one of the things that, you know, that the whole I've talked a fair bit about that whole thing with the SALT stuff. The problem I have with allowing deductibility of that sort of thing, of state and local taxes, is that what you're doing is you're incentivizing. You're basically giving the state a 30% rebate on screwing their residents. All right. Now, that, perverse incentive, Chief.
You feel the same way as Kevin does on this, and both the Bodias,
perverse incentives are perverse incentives, okay? And I'm not saying that you know, somebody does, you know, people don't get their ox gored. Of course they do. But what you're doing is incentivizing states to be and localities to be inefficient.
Carl, it's going to shock the hell out of the Bodias, but probably a decade or two ago, I actually wrote a pretty serious paper on how deductibility of mortgage interest and deductibility of taxes is a total screw up. All you're doing is incentivizing things the wrong way. But I also said, and I used to write a column. But you can't shock people either. You have to come out and say, okay, here's what we're going to do: the deductibility of homeowners' interest, which benefits the owner, not the lessor, not the lessee. Let's not do that forever. But you can't just say tomorrow. On top of a soapbox, you've got to say, okay, we think this is a bad idea. It's been going on for a long time, but we're not going to shock anybody. For next year, it's 90% deductible. The year after that, it's 80% or something.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, Chief. All right, it's been almost 8 years now since Trump got rid of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How many states and counties have decreased their spending and cut property taxes?
Probably none.
Zero.
Yeah.
So you tell me why not shocking people is somehow going to make the accountability improve at the state level.
I never once said that. My point was, it was put in there with the intention of only harming rich people who people at the time said didn't support the guy. Okay, which maybe are true or not true. But the fact is, it's now not for rich people. It's for everybody, or for a lot of people.
Well, of course, yeah, hello, but here's the thing, all right? So You know what the answer to this is? If the states and the localities will not, you know, will not cut that out.
Well, I mean, you can use these kinds of, you know, I know you and Kevin like to talk about, you know, we're going to spank the bad states, but the bottom line is, nobody should be paying tax on tax. I mean, every time I buy gas here, and I'm paying sales tax on the state and the other tax, I think that's bullshit, to be honest with you.
Well, I agree with
this. You can say, oh, okay, we're going to pay sales tax. We'll show the state not to have a 12% or an 18%, 18-cent tax on gas. People will rise up and throw Pritzker out of there. People can't rise up and do anything. All you're doing is screwing them.
Well, okay. And in 1999, well, 2000 actually, but you know, decision was made then. In 2000, this guy said Illinois can suck my you know what, and I left. All right, and then
I get it.
In 2019, when I saw the disaster that was Florida's insurance and tax market, okay. And I saw it coming, and the promises that were made that DeSantis
I get
was
all that.
Fix
I'm saying,
this. Well, guess what? I left again.
I get all that, but I'm saying we have a system here. I mean, and you're right. We're just talking two different levels of the chessboard here. I mean, as an individual, you have the ability to take a look at this and be gone. But you don't have. I mean, I don't think you do. If all of a sudden you had five or six brothers and sisters and maybe parents that aren't feeling so hot and a bunch of grandkids and stuff in Florida, I got news for you. You're not leaving. You're like the guy in the Superman movie. He couldn't leave Krypton, right? You're not going. I mean, some people are just locked in to where they are. Matter of fact, most people are, I think. I mean,
well,
I was supposed to, when I was at Pullman, I was transferred to Butler, Pennsylvania, and I go, wait a minute. My family's not in Butler, Pennsylvania. Right. My softball team's not in Butler, Pennsylvania. Where's all my handball partners? My basketball leagues, they're not there. I'm staying. You guys can shove it where the sun don't shine. I didn't say it that way.
Okay,
but I mean, you know, if I had no family, if I didn't care about sports, I had no friends, what's the difference? I'd be in Butler.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. So
and it might have been at the thing where they tried to shoot Trump in Butler.
But, Chief, isn't this ultimately, when you get down to it, isn't this ultimately about the people not being willing to rise up and do something about the politicians?
But
nobody
wants
this
to go. I'm saying, I think on a theoretical level, I don't like taxes on taxes. I mean,
neither do I.
The U.S. situation is, I mean, I'd rather be here than virtually any other country, but this is our own phenomenon where we have, it's stunning to me when I see some bozo, boy, you got me going here, on CNBC saying, look at all these people, they don't pay any taxes because they don't pay any federal income taxes because they probably have a family and make under 40
grand. No, but every
grand.
Time they go in the store, they pay taxes.
Yeah, they're paying state. Every time they get a car, it's what, $1,000 to get the titles and everything else changed.
Come to Tennessee. Three vehicles, including tags and the title changes, were about $100.
Well, okay, but now to go to Indiana, they charge you your license is based on the value of your car.
Well,
don't
move to Kentucky because they have a personal property tax on vehicles too.
So what I'm saying is that you know the idea that you know you're paying property taxes for somebody to say. I use this wacky story because, I mean, I see it. I observe stuff, Carl. We all have a lot of similarities on the show. We observe stuff. When I lived at 70 West Huron, I lived there for about 10 years. My mom's still on the south side, so every Saturday or Sunday, I'd run downstairs, and I'd get my Ford Bronco, and I'd head south and take her to breakfast. And the interesting part is most people say, what a great son that he was the giver. No. Every time I went at breakfast or I learned something, I was the taker. My mom was a special person. But anyway, I'd go downstairs, and they had one of those little, you know, like a 7-Eleven sort of thing. And most of the time, I'd see this black guy who worked the streets all night. You know, he wasn't a bad dude. He's got like $20. This is, you know, this is a long time ago. The guy would buy a quart of something, some kind of pop, three bags of Doritos, and like 15 lottery tickets. And I'm sitting there going, this poor bastard. Nice guy, when I use the term bastard, this poor guy probably had the highest tax rate of anybody in town.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, you've got people that are paying property taxes, paying sales taxes, paying every time you get gas, every time you go to the store. And, oh, by the way, you're buying lottery tickets because you can't do the math. What is your tax rate, for God's sake?
Well, yeah.
I mean, to say they're paying no taxes is stone-cold ignorant.
Yeah, the thing is I just keep looking at all these different things. And, you know, what I see across the line is, you know, it's the same sort of thing that goes on with all this healthcare nonsense, right? We have a confluence of actors at all levels. You know, you have the Chicago Public Schools, which says, we are going to resist illegal immigrants being deported. We're not going to let any of those ICE people come on our property. Well, first off, it's not your property. It's owned by the people of the city of Chicago, number one. All right. So therefore, bite me would be my answer to that. Here comes the cops. And by the way, if you want to resist, you can eat an obstruction of justice charge. We'll see how you like that. The second thing that goes along with this, though, goes all the way back to when I was running my company. 8 out of 10 people that had high school diplomas, so they had graduated from the Chicago public school system, could not do four-function mathematics, arithmetic, on a piece of paper with a pencil.
We're talking addition,
subtraction, multiplication, division, and they couldn't write a basic business letter using the English language to tell somebody how much money they had to pay in order to get their account turned back on. Those were the two tests that every single person that came in my office looking for a job had to pass. Why? Because you might have to make change for somebody that came in and paid cash out of the petty cash drawer. And part of the job was explaining to people that, you know, your service isn't working because you didn't pay your bill.
Carl, we got a dash here, but I would bet you if you someplace somewhere, somebody always has something, even before computer storage. I'll bet if somebody dragged out final exams for 7th and 6th and 8th graders given in the Depression and dropped them on people today,
they couldn't do them. Well, but this is the thing. Why does the state and the city of Chicago, why do any of the employees of CPS get a check?
I think a real lot of them, Carl, and I talk to people, a real lot of them are the situation is absolutely hopeless. Because in the Depression, you didn't have Adderall, you didn't have Ritalin, you didn't have people stealing other people's drugs. Everybody's drugged.
Guess what?
You don't have family. I mean, even though the families were poor and having all kinds of problems, you had families.
I get that, Chief. So, all right, so stop wasting the effing money.
I think you need to take a totally different focus, and you need to teach kids like you did during the Depression.
Assume
they have nobody at home. Don't send homework home. You're not going to help. As my mother used to say, you got 6 hours of a kid. That's plenty.
Chief, I understand this, but my point is this. Don't pay for failures.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
A million people are dead because we paid for failures.
Well, I get it. Hey, what do you got going this weekend? When are you going skiing? You going tomorrow?
I'm on my way out of here, and I'm going to have fun for a week or so.
So we won't hear you Tuesday. We will Friday.
That's right. You will not hear me on Tuesday, but you will on Friday.
All right, bud. Well, be safe, will you? Now, you know, you're a little old for these black runs.
Oh, no. The blacks don't bother me. Now, double blacks is a different story.
Now, the ones with the trees, don't be going through the trees.
Oh, the glades? What's wrong with the glades? No, actually, my daughter is not good enough to... She boards rather than skis.
Ah.
And she's not good enough to go ripping the glades. And I will not do them without somebody else. And the reason is where I'm going, right now there's 90 inches of snow on the ground.
Where are you going?
Out to Colorado.
And which one?
Wolf Creek.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you like Wolf Creek. That's the one.
Yeah, I like it a lot. And they have 90 inches of snow out there. If you wipe out in a glade and you are under the surface and there isn't somebody else there, they will find you in May.
Well, also, if you can't find your ski, if you can't find your ski, you're not getting out of there.
Well, I mean, basically, if if something goes wrong and there's not somebody else there with you,
I did that a couple times. You're supposed to put the safety straps back on right? If you go into powder.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Glades, you know, the basic bottom line is that, you know, there's a couple of ways to end up dead doing that. And, you know, getting buried is one of them and hitting a tree is another. So, I mean, but if there's nobody there.
Yeah, you got trouble.
You're the only one. Then, you know, then somebody isn't even going to know that something bad happened. I mean, you know, they can send a snow cat up there to, you know, to help extricate you. But there's got to be someone that knows that there's trouble.
Yeah, most of the time people didn't find that out until somebody didn't show up from the bar.
Well, so if you're going to ski in there, you really do. There needs to be two of you that are.
Thankfully, I was never that good. So anyway, be careful. SP Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 30. Good job, Carl, on these reports. This is a crazy report. I hope it gets better. When is this household survey going to get any better? It seems like every month it's bad.
Well, when we stop doing stupid things.
Well, that's, oh God.
That may not happen for a while.
On that note, we'll be back tomorrow, Stocks, or Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.